Welcome to podcasts from AmericanCityAndCounty.com, exclusive interviews with local and state government leaders and experts in a variety of disciplines. Tune in regularly to hear the magazine's editors discuss news and trends in public policy, technology, public works, finance, and infrastructure. The live interviews are available only from American City and County, the voice of local and state government for nearly 100 years.
An award-winning engineering, construction, and operations firm, CH2M Hill has earned the confidence of communities across the U.S. with our innovative water, energy, transportation, and environmental projects. Today, we're serving clients in more ways than ever before. Performance optimization, revenue enhancement, electronic plan review. From short-term consulting to hands-on operations, CH2M Hill partners with you to make your community more efficient, cost-effective, and responsive to citizens. Visit ch2mhill.com to learn more.
Hello, I'm John Nalbandian. I teach at the University of Kansas. Here today with David Warm, who's the Executive Director of the Mid-America Regional Council, and we're going to be talking about collaboration. Lawrence is about an hour west of here, and Dave and I know each other from a number of other events. He used to be a city manager. I've been an elected official as well. So we welcome you to this podcast. And David, would you like to introduce yourself?
John, it's great to have you here. I think, as your listeners know, the Mid-America Regional Council is the Association of Local Governments serving metropolitan Kansas City. I've been in this role as executive director for over 20 years now. Prior to that, was in city government. And we serve a very complicated metropolitan area, as most places are in America, some 9 counties, 120 cities spanning the state line between Missouri and Kansas. We work to bring those communities together to work on issues that affect our entire metropolitan area. And so we work in a lot of different areas, in transportation, the environment, public safety, human services, a lot of local government initiatives, and hopefully serve as a good platform for helping our community come together in meaningful ways.
Dave, I'm glad to be here with you as well. And I've got a couple of questions for you about collaboration and what you do here in the region. What are some of the factors that are driving the need for collaboration here? And why do you think collaboration is important to the kinds of issues that you're facing?
Well, collaboration, particularly at an intergovernmental level or a cross-sectoral level, is not a new thing. It's been around for a long time. But in recent years, it's become more prevalent and more complex and more multifaceted. And I think perhaps the number one driver are the new fiscal realities that face all institutions who are serving our community. But perhaps equally important, I think we recognize that, at least in metropolitan areas, that no single community, no single organization can do what it needs to compete at a national or global scale even without coming together, at least in part, to build the capacities and strategies that we all need to succeed and compete. And I think further, many of the issues that really trouble communities, whether it's environmental degradation or social problems, need to be addressed not only at a local level, those are important dimensions, but also have to be involved at a broader regional or metropolitan scale.
Dave, let me follow up on that, because it's interesting. Logically, there are these problems that you could look at objectively and say they require a big picture thinking. But the jurisdictions are not big jurisdictions necessarily. They're smaller than the problems, right? Can you speak to that issue of the difference between the sort of the way the jurisdictions might look at approach a problem the way you approach it?
Right. I think when it comes to regional affairs, intergovernmental affairs, the partnerships aren't substitutions for good local strategies. They are additive. They are ways to make local communities, local services more effective through cooperative initiative. And so almost any issue you can think of requires a local strategy. It requires a regional or metropolitan strategy, and it usually requires a state strategy as well. Say transportation, for instance. You've got to be very mindful of your local road system and local road network and the planning decisions you make that impact that. But you can't do that when you're surrounded by other jurisdictions alone. You also have to have a regional strategy.
Great. Thank you. So, Dave, is it true that your nickname is Mr. Collaboration?
We try to live up to that motto, even if it's not always true.
Where do you get the ideas for collaborative projects? Where do they come from? And how do you decide, you know, this is important to do, this is less important? Who makes those decisions?
The ideas for regional collaboration come from all quarters. They come from elected officials, including the local elected officials that serve on our board of directors and guide our affairs. They come from professional managers at all levels, not only city managers, but public works and fire chief and other leaders in local government. Sometimes they come from funding opportunities. The federal or state government in particular might put a program together that we can compete for more effectively by working collaboratively, and occasionally from the civic community where there will be an initiative underway and there's a desire for a group like ours to house or move it forward. But it is sometimes hard to figure out where to land, and I think from our perspective, we tend to go, A, where we're wanted, if there's some energy, and B, if there's some opportunity for us to make a difference. There not only needs to be a motive to do something, but there has to be an opportunity in the environment willing to change and willing to be influenced. And I think further, and this is most important, we often go where there's a point of leadership, whether it's a local government manager or a fire chief or a group of elected officials who are willing to put their efforts together. Regional collaboration never occurs from the top down. It always occurs from the bottom up. And unless there is a willing set of relationships to be made, we don't succeed.
What about those? You have certain activities that are mandated, don't you, by the federal government? I mean, you're a metropolitan planning organization, aren't you?
And that's correct.
So in effect, you do transportation planning mandated by the federal government. Does that change the dynamic?
It does to some degree. I think when there is a funding expectation or regulatory expectation that things will be done in an interjurisdictional collaborative way, that does bring people together. But you still have to approach the content of that work from the perspective of serving the people who are around the table. Even though, for instance, in transportation, we've got to come up with a regional plan in order to expend federal money. How we do that requires the willing participation and the collaboration of the parties involved.
You're working with a lot of different partners on different projects. And, David, are there some roadblocks or challenges that you commonly anticipate?
Certainly. Regional affairs, by their very nature, are complicated matters. We're working with multifaceted institutions and multiple players, and just the fragmentation of local governments structurally makes it hard sometimes to come up with solutions that meets everybody's needs. And you layer on top of that our political environment, in which people are often driven to ideological corners or encounter other divisions in values in the broader society that make us hard to find common solutions. But I think as hard as those challenges are inherently, the real opportunities are if we can find the process and the leadership to approach those and find our way to navigate through those divisions, we can usually find a successful solution. And so the real roadblocks that are meaningful are when we don't have the leadership in place or the approach that we take to the problem, which are factors that are within our control as a community. That's where we put our attention.
But leadership, though, is a little different in this context, isn't it? I mean, there's no hierarchy that we're talking about. But are there some problems for which there are kind of some jurisdictions are naturally the leader? Or is leadership an issue? Who's going to take the lead? And then what about the issue of building trust?
Well, leadership is central to collaboration at any level. I was listening to the corollary to our interview, John, with Michael Wilkes and Susan Sherman of Olathe, Kansas, and both of them sort of indicated their collaboration within their jurisdiction began at the top. It began with expectations that we're going to create a culture of collaboration, and then it also began continued through a very thoughtful process that engaged their employees in that work. At a regional level, it's the same dynamic. There needs to be expectation of civic leaders, of community leaders, that we will strive to work together. Sometimes that leadership can come from, say, a public works director working within the context of the engineering community and trying to drive change or innovation. But then it's approaching the actual resolution of those issues in a way that's inclusive and open and shared and tries to find a middle ground between the individual interests of the participants and the broader interests of working together.
Do you think that you can, a region can develop a culture of collaboration regionally?
I think so. I think that that perhaps has been the story of our organization, where we have demonstrated in single initiatives that we can work together, and that's given us the confidence and the relationships and the trust, if you will, to work on broader, more difficult challenges. And I think we're beginning across America to mature in our intergovernmental and our civic relationships in a way that is allowing us to look at things in more unique ways.
Dave, there must be some jurisdictions in our region. Well, I know there are. They're larger and maybe more influential than the others. How do you acknowledge those differences in scope and influence, but still keep everyone else in the game?
Well, it is a constant process, and how that plays out varies issue by issue and circumstance by circumstance. I will say this, that over the course of years, most of the issues we've dealt with, I have seen there be respect among smaller jurisdictions, that the larger jurisdictions do need more attention, resources, but then likewise the respect that larger jurisdictions have, that they need to be equitable and open and develop solutions that serve everyone. And so it's a constant process of figuring out that right balance in the context of any given issue.
Have you found yourself as kind of the bridge to those relationships?
Right. I think that again, that becomes a matter of developing a process in which those differences can be ironed out. And having a neutral forum, having a platform in place, such as our organization, or sometimes it can be a university or chamber of commerce or some kind of other neutral entity where all jurisdictions can come together, as well as non-public jurisdictions. Oftentimes the issues we're dealing with involve not-for-profit agencies or business organizations, where they can come together in a neutral space and work out their differences. Sometimes our most effective leadership comes from smaller jurisdictions because they can be, if you will, brokers, if you honest brokers of an issue where the stakes are not so high for them that they can sometimes find the middle ground among the larger jurisdictions.
You talk about neutrality, and this is a neutral space. How do you convey to the jurisdictions that this is a neutral space?
Well, I think it's a constant process of building trust over a period of time. We tend to do it by following some very specific techniques that when we undertake an issue, we start with the facts. We start with defining the problem before we jump to a solution. We start with making sure that local needs are well documented and incorporated into decision making. We start with trying to find a neutral shared leadership. I mean, we often, for instance, we'll work with co-chairs, one from Kansas, one from Missouri, one from a large jurisdiction, one from a small jurisdiction. So oftentimes it's just organizing techniques that create openness and neutrality. I think the key to it is openness, in fact. I think the more transparent we are, the more fact-driven we are, the more listening we do, the more that we allow the voices to come up from the process rather than from our staff or our expertise, the more we build that expectation over time that we can be a neutral place where these tough issues can be ironed out.
Dave, you talked about this being a neutral space and the building of trust, crucial neutrality being crucial to the issue of trust and so on and so forth. What about... Let's try to take the lessons learned and put them, you know, extend them a little bit. What do you learn in this sort of neutral space that is applicable to managers and elected officials who are working in a single jurisdiction and maybe even in an organization that's hierarchically organized?
Right. I think that that you mentioned the word trust, and I think that that is at the core of this work of collaboration. I don't think we're in the regional business or the collaboration business. We're in the trust-building business. And you build trust in any relationship, whether it's within a family or within a department or within city government or at a regional scale, by all the ways that you know how to do that, by treating people the way you would expect to be treated, by being open, by being honest, by being transparent in your motives, by being in communication, being in constant relationship with the individuals with which you're trying to build trust. And it occurs over a period of time. And it's additive. And if you have a strong enough level of trust, if you make a mistake in any one direction, you can usually overlook that for a period of time. And so it is really about structuring decision-making processes, whether they're within an organization or within a community or within a region, that are aimed first and foremost at building and strengthening relationships, and in the process, solving the problem that you're setting out to solve.
And you know, Dave, I think I just want to pick up on one point there, what you said about the transparency of motives. And check me if I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that when people suspect that your underlying motive is to advance the interests of the Mid-America Regional Council or a particular jurisdiction, the defenses go up and trust that you've built becomes eroded. Is it anything to that?
There's absolutely everything to that. I mean, and we understand that very clearly as an institution. And so when we do public education or outreach, we're not trying to brand the Mid-America Regional Council. We're trying to brand a solution around stormwater, or brand a solution to public safety. And it's the problem or the solution that we communicate with first and foremost, and try to keep ourselves as a secondary communication issue. And I think the same thing happens in relationship with the city council and its citizens. If they're trying to sell a bond issue, they're not selling themselves. They're selling the impact they're having on the community that they're serving, and that becomes the point of communication.
So, Dave, what do you consider Mark's most significant achievement that might be able to be replicated elsewhere?
That's a difficult question and can be answered on really a lot of different levels. I feel like we've made some innovations in certain areas, like a coordinated response to emergencies, as well as a coordinated response to traffic management, and some other very tangible things we're proud of and that are innovative and have a huge impact on our community. But I think if you were to ask a city manager, for instance, what their greatest achievement was, they're not going to simply talk about the bridge that got built or the neighborhood that got restored or the streets that got plowed. They're going to talk to you about the role that they have in the lives of their citizens. And I think for us as an institution, it's a similar kind of answer. It's the role that we play in this community, the capacity that we have built over time, where the community is able to turn to us as a platform where they can come together and solve mutual issues. We view ourselves very much as a tool, a tool of the community that's malleable and usable to help the community do what it wants to do mutually. And I think it is building up that capacity and that reputation and that set of relationships with our local governments as well as the broader community that I'm the proudest of.
Over time, have you seen, as the Mid-America Regional Council's reputation has grown, has it changed the nature of the work, or changed the I mean are people more inclined to bring to enter into work with Mark?
I mean, that's frankly why I've been here 20 years. It's not the same job as it was when I started. The nature of our work is expanded significantly, not only in scope topically, but in the types of work that we do. And early on, we were primarily doing long-range planning and some funding allocation. We've now moved much more actively into policy setting. We've moved much more active into cooperative service delivery. We've moved into lots of different relationships with different parts of the region, a lot of cross-sectoral collaborations that we enable. I think that's one of the things that we provide to the community, is to make bridges to the not-for-profit or business, civic, community, or regional level, and help bring the voice of local government into those broader regional conversations. And so, yes, I think that as local governments and others have worked together cooperatively under the umbrella of Mark, They have expanded the nature of our work and the role that we play in the community.
Dave, you mentioned earlier the idea that Mark over time has been become involved in shared service delivery and also cross-sector partnerships. Particularly in the cross-sector partnerships, that would mean that you've developed, Mark has developed a reputation not only within governmental jurisdictions, but private nonprofit sector as well. Is that true?
That is true. We work, for instance, in early education, which puts us in direct connection with early education providers ranging from family agencies to the YMCA that are working collaboratively on improving access and quality of early education in the community. We just recently have been asked by a broad coalition of local governments as well as community agencies to help lead implementation of a coordinated homelessness strategy and helping to bring us together in a more strategic cross-sectoral way to deal with that issue that every local government is increasingly grappling with. But requires cooperation of mental health agencies, police agencies, courts, local governments, not-for-profit organizations that need to be working in mutually supportive ways.
So as much as anything else, you convene people around an issue, right?
That's correct, and we play different roles around that. Sometimes it's at the early end of an issue where we're just trying to figure out what the strategy is. In the case of homelessness, it was an initiative that actually began with the Bar Association and then went to the Kansas City, Missouri City Hall, and then they brought in some regional partners, and then they brought in more sectors. And at some point they said, you know, we need to find a platform that can help us take this conversation toward implementation. And so we are assuming work that has been done outside of these offices and are now putting together a strategy to bring foundations and local governments and federal funding into more coordinated a focus to help make that strategy happen over time.
So if a person thinks in very disciplinary fashion and very specifically, Mark is probably not the place that they want to work?
I think that's part of what we try to do is attract people who can work, who are very flexible intellectually and have a wide range of skills. I mean, and on the other end of the building, we're managing the 911 system.
Yeah.
And that's an example of how our work and how a regional organization can morph and change over time. When we first started that work some two decades ago, we helped coordinate a regional ballot initiative that raised county-level taxes to create 911. And we served simply as a central bill-playing service with one telephone company at the time. Well, everything's changed. There's dozens of telephone companies and dozens of telephone technologies, and we now play a much more expansive role where we're maintaining equipment, we're doing public education, we're in classrooms on behalf of the whole system, we're coordinating investment, we're tying it to the broader emergency communications network, we're managing the actual database for elements of the system. And so it's bit by bit, the local government managers who have led that system have been more expansive, more collaborative, more far-reaching in what they're willing to do together, and they've helped invest in the capacity here in this organization to support them in that work.
Dave, you were a city manager before you became the executive director of MARC. What do you wish you would have known about regionalism when you were a city manager?
Well, with the benefit of retrospective, I think that actually city managers today are more sophisticated as a group than I was 20 years ago about these matters. And I think just the passage of time and the factors we were talking about earlier, more managers spend more time in intergovernmental or intersectoral relationships and they're just generally more sophisticated about it. But I think even today, I think that had I known when I was a manager a little bit more about the regional context, about how much the fate of my community was driven by broader economic and social and civic systems, I would have spent more time in understanding them and connecting us to those realities. And so it's a little bit an appreciation, I think, that would have been broader. Number one, I would have benefited from, and number two, I would have put more time into that part of my work. Now, I think fast forward, I think the average city manager today is putting a lot of time into it, but still, even today, is primarily focused on the city limits that they serve, and that's what preoccupies them, rightfully so. but perhaps I think there needs to continually be a reminder that what happens inside those four, you know, the boundaries of a community are affected extraordinarily by what happens next door.
You know, Dave, what seems to me to be frustrating, and I wonder if it's frustrating for you, I mean, it's frustrating for me as a faculty member, but the business of economic development, where, you know, the idea that a jurisdiction in a metro area would actually have its own economy or act as if it has its own economy and competing against each other, I mean, it seems so illogical, but on the other hand, there clearly are incentives that are driving that, or it wouldn't happen. You have a comment on?
Yeah, you know, this issue of economic development and how we pursue it in 120 places in any given metropolitan area at the same time is one of the most vexing issues that we face, and any metropolitan area faces. And frankly, it's the area that our organization has had the least influence on, in part because while everybody on one level understands that we are all in the same economy and we are all affected by one another, on another level, it's just really hard to resist a deal that might result in expanding one's local tax base or in filling up an office park or whatever the local objective might be. And that is an area where America needs to get much more mature, much more sophisticated in figuring out how we're using our public resources to not simply move the pieces of the economic puzzle around a region, but to, in fact, grow the size of the economic pie in any given metropolitan area.
I suppose in a case like that, too, it illustrates the incentives that different tax structures, right? I mean, a property tax or a sales tax, I mean, if you're heavily reliant on sales tax, you want retail.
Right. And it's the trick of these issues of economic incentives within a metropolitan area. If you look at every deal in and of itself, it makes sense to somebody. It makes sense typically to that local jurisdiction or perhaps that state. It makes sense to that developer. It makes sense to that office park. But when you add them all together, it may or may not make sense for the metropolitan area. And that's I think that's going to require a lot harder work in the years ahead as public resources get more and more scarce, and we have to decide where to devote them.
So where does that big picture thinking come from then?
It comes from all of us. I mean, nobody has the answer to this. The number one rule of regional affairs is you got to find the intersection between local self-interest and broader regional interest. You cannot substitute one for the other. You've got to find out what works locally and regionally has to be the same thing. And so this is an area where we've got to keep working, we've got to keep talking, we've got to keep finding the policies that get better and better that allow us to meet our regional competitive mandates, but at the same time allow each local jurisdiction to continue to try to expand its own tax base. It's a tricky issue. It's as tricky as they get.
Dave, you're involved with both local government professionals on some of your committees and projects, and also you have a board elected officials, and you're working with elected officials as well. Can you talk to us a little bit about the way they view regionalism, and do they view it? I mean, are there differences in perspective that you have to respect?
Now, that's an interesting question. Certainly, it's very situational, and certainly it's driven by the personalities at any given point in time, whether they're elected leaders or appointed leaders. I would say that by and large, the elected leaders set the tone. They are the gatekeepers to regionalism. They enable it to happen. The managers figure out the solutions. And so sometimes the real work has to begin at a managerial level so that issues can be framed in a way that are politically acceptable. Other times, it has to come from political leaders who say, you know, we want to work this out and enable or empower their managers to do that. I have found, interestingly enough, that some of the best initiators of regional collaboration are department directors. They are high enough in their organizations that they have a broad managerial perspective. They understand the values of the community, and yet they're not so high that anything they say is the voice of the entire community. And so that frees them up a little bit to talk with their neighbors about how they might do things differently. And then they craft solutions or approaches that then can be sold locally because they make sense locally.
So would that be like like public works people street maintenance?
Yeah, in fact, public works directors are among the most collaborative in the region. Fire chiefs are very collaborative. I find that leading professionals who come out of a discipline that has a shared set of values, or maybe they have a professional association, or they have a relationship outside of their local government role, has given them the perspective that they understand how they can work together more easily and more seamlessly.
Interesting. And I suppose then these people are problem-driven rather than jurisdiction. Intersection.
Absolutely. They're very loyal and supportive of their local prerogatives, to be sure. But at the same time, they understand the norms of, say, the fire service or of engineering standards. And that allows them to speak a language, frankly, that is common and facilitates a mutual endeavor. But, you know, in regional affairs, at the end of the day, it's all important. It doesn't happen unless typically the professional support is there to make it happen and to carry it through, and it doesn't happen first and foremost if the political support is there. And so you can't come up with solutions that require a local elected official to sacrifice their constituents' interests. Just won't happen. And so you've got to find solutions or strategies that enable a local elected leader to bring home a better solution to their constituency, because they're able to get farther faster by working together.
We've come to a close in our conversation, and I hope everybody who is listening and taking advantage of this will appreciate it and appreciate what you've said. Dave and Mark's accomplished a lot in your 20 years, and I've really enjoyed having this time to talk with you.
John, it's good to see you as always. It was a great conversation.
Thank you.